Well, today we're going to start a mini-series, if you will, topical. It's a topical series. If you were in an adult Bible study this summer with Gerard, one of his lessons on the I Ams, he talked about the Ten Commandments of Progressive Christianity. He listed them, but I went and bought the book, and I thought that will be a good springboard to differentiate what the true Christian church believes versus how culture has redefined it. So today we're going to talk about progressive problems, part one, a little bit. You know, knowing me, I've got to give a little background. What does that word progressive mean? Well, we have a definition today, but where did it come from? And that's an old cartoon from an old paper years and years ago. And that's a good picture. You know, the progress is crushing all opposition. Andrew Breitbart, many of you will know that name, but he's a sort of a saint in conservative political circles. In fact, one of his website, Breitbart News, presents news more from the conservative side, but he has a famous quote that he coined: politics is downstream of culture. But, and he's not saying this, I'm saying this, but culture is downstream from theology, our worldview. And so what we're looking at here with progressive problems, going to talk about the original progressives, including our government, which back in 2016, that's quite a while ago, but our politics and religions series talked about the, you know, where our view of the Constitution has gone. So there is a government political aspect, but I do want to make sure we point out that is all a reflection of culture and where we are. In the text that Calvin read about Jesus' trial before the Roman procurator, Pontius the Pilate. I don't know where he got the planes back then, but Pontius Pilate. And he asked that the $64 question, quid est veritas? What is truth? And, you know, and we know, can you imagine, you've got the Son of God, you've got truth incarnate standing in front of you. And he's, you know, the skepticism of his day. It's a very important question. And in fact, in the First John series, we talked a lot about abiding in the truth. And one of the problems in culture, or, you know, is, and I'm mainly talking about America here, but over the 1800s, towards the latter half of the 1800s, and then into the 2000, you know, the 1900s, and now, of course, into the 2000s. But the problem of cultural redefinition, something you've heard the phrase postmodernism. Well, that's a nebulous term, but basically the thinking involved in what postmodernism is. We're sort of the other side of that now in the 2025. But it has affected a lot about how we view reality, truth, government, especially, but morals. And then next week we'll get more into how that has affected the so-called church. I heard someone once say, or define it, that postmodernism can be summarized in that it's a radical, you know, not like the groovy kids say, but radical comes from a Latin phrase meaning going to the very root. So a radical skepticism or hermeneutic, how you look at books, discover truth, especially a hermeneutic, the art of interpretation for the Bible. So radical skepticism, you know, I determine what is true, plausible. You know, I don't believe authorities, texts, you know. And so think about how this could have crept into the church. But in society in general, we are suspicious of all the everything. A radical autonomy. I am the master of my fate, the captain of my soul. That was a good old Nelson Mandela while he was in prison leaned on that, you know, it's me alone. I determine my life. A radical pragmatism, you know, whatever works for you. And as Americans, we are very pragmatic in that we like what works, but pragmatism becomes an ism, a false test for truth, that if we think it works, it must be true. So whatever works for you, and, you know, especially in this life, a radical morality. I'm sure you don't believe that, but turn on the news. And John 3:19, for example, you know, men love darkness rather than light because their deeds were evil. We don't like, we're like cockroaches in the dark, you know, living with our autonomous radical morality. We don't like the light of truth and being accountable to that. And as a chaplain, I definitely saw that in that other ways of life, other religions, for example, first they were to be tolerated. Toleration carries a little bit of a negative. I don't agree with it, but I'm going to accept you as a person, even though I don't believe what you believe. So religious toleration for chaplains was the norm. But then it became religious acceptance. We had to accept what they said. Then we had to affirm, you know, oh, that view is just as valid as my view. And then we had to celebrate that view and think of lifestyles, think of cultural issues that if you dare to not celebrate it, you can be on the wrong side of history, as they say. And I would submit that, you know, that the theory of evolution has affected a lot of this. But spiritually, you always hear your former pastor talk about sin is worse than we think it is. We are not evolving. I would say we are devolving in that, in our these things that postmodernism affect. So radical morality. And then finally, a radical pluralism, which in the religious realm just means there are many paths to God. There are no absolutes or exclusive claims. I am the final authority. So whatever you believe, if you're a nice person, you know, that's just as valid as Christianity, you Bible thumpers. And if you were here for adult Bible study, we talked a lot about that. So, thanks, Sam. Here I am already. I didn't sleep well last night, so sorry, you're going to have to put up with my wandering. So we've talked about the effects of so-called postmodernism. But now, so the problem of progressivism in culture and the government. A definition of the progressive era was back in the 1800s, the latter half of the 1800s, but it was the direct and conscious rejection of the original principles of the Constitution. And that's, if you want a good lessons on all this, I highly commend Hillsdale College, their free online lessons on politics, government, things like that. And some of the ideas of those original progressives, we have progressed beyond the principles of the founders. We need a new understanding of government. We need a national, not a federal. There's a big difference. We need a national You know, everything should be controlled from Washington. Because, and we need that because the economic and cultural circumstances that could not be, they could not be envisioned by the founders. We need to evolve. We need to, you know, grow. Because, you know, those old dead guys, they could never understand. They were bound by their historical contingency. I mean, we know newer is always better. I mean, turn on ads that, you know, new and improved toothpaste. So the Constitution was old, out of date. We have new problems. And the Constitution ends up being an obstacle to government policies. The historical arrogance of those old dead white guys, our founders, they were daring to speak for all times. How dare they, as St. Greta would say. Do you have your... never mind. And this, and I, you know, I don't want to, this stuff fascinates me. I don't want to, you know, get too in the weeds, but this reflects a very European and German model of the state, you know, no individual natural rights. It's what you can do for the state. And that became a living constitution. And the text basically can become anything we want. Remember those radical, the postmodernism, a radical hermeneutic. We can interpret the Constitution, you know, and let alone the Bible, the way we want. And a good government, the Constitution, adapts to the environment. Charles Darwin was, you know, evolution was becoming very popular. Some names, some big names that maybe you probably never heard. Has anybody ever heard of Frank Johnson Goodnow? I'd be surprised if you did. But he said that not the natural rights of individuals granted by God, but society for social expediency. So it's not individual God-given rights, it's what's best for society. I know most of you, especially you teachers, John Dewey was big into this. The permanence of natural rights is a relic of a bygone era, relevant to only their time. They don't understand historical relativity. Can you hear the words? Any of you ever heard of FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt? He was a sort of at the tail end of these original progressives. The Declaration of Independence has eternal truths, but the task of statesmanship has always been the redefinition of these rights in terms of the changing and growing social order. Woodrow Wilson, if you want to understand the real Declaration of Independence, do not repeat the preface talking about timeless laws of nature and nature's God. It was a historical grievance only. You know, the Declaration, we were, you know, that bad old king over in England. And then in another speech in 1912, he said, government is a living thing, understood like organic life versus the mechanistic view of the founders and the Newtonian perspective of the Federalist Papers. In other words, guys like Newton, they didn't know what was right. Newtonian physics, you know, we've evolved. And so, you know, we know how much better. And so the government needs to be accountable to Darwin, shaped to its function by the pressure of life. Here's one that, you know, that disappoints me, but Teddy Roosevelt was a big progressive, you know, and he gave us the Great White Fleet. What branch of service is that? I don't remember. But also the, you know, what he did for the national parks. But he had, you know, knowing his populist, and we are experiencing a lot of that today, his very populist understanding. He believed in what was called the stewardship theory or the plenary view of government. In other words, government can do whatever is necessary unless it is specifically restricted. That's the exact opposite of what the enumerated powers say. And then in another speech, he was an advocate of direct democracy. Institutions are corrupt, which I agree with him there. But, you know, we're going to turn it over to direct democracy to the unwashed masses so that we, you know, the majority rules. And I'm sure, well, and so one big court case of the day, the courts are thwarting the people seeking equal opportunity. People want equal opportunity. Well, how are we going to do that? And construing property rights to the exclusion of human rights. In other words, you selfish people that want to hang on to your property, don't you care about other humans? Yeah, and talking about having the first mortgage on the Constitution. In other words, you know, the property rights, life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness, which was the pursuit of property and, you know, just the Constitution and our God-given rights. Private property is a good thing, but that gets in the way of benefiting all. And then back to Woodrow Wilson, he did not like the separation of powers, if you understand the Constitution. He liked the parliamentary system over in Europe once again. See, very European model. And all these guys had PhDs from German model schools like Princeton and Johns Hopkins. Because parliamentary system, the legislature, if you control the legislature, you also control the prime minister. And there are no then checks and balances. He did not like the Federalist Papers, which if you, the Federalist Papers are required reading if you want to understand the founding documents, because it talked about not allowing any one branch of government to get too powerful. And so he complained that these separation of powers were inefficient. Government can't solve problems. Gridlock. Government should operate like business. They're irresponsible. Government gets in the way of the will of the people. The government must adapt to its functions and tasks. And he had a sort of a term that empower the national administration and free it from politics. So how are you going to do that? Well, you change the structure of the Constitution, adapting that structure. So we celebrate politics, the vox populi, the voice of the people, from administration. So the people just vote whatever they want in their pure moral thinking, and then that gives you a mandate for the government to enact that through administration, the rise of the bureaucratic state, any way necessary. And we have experts ruling, ruling us inferior folks. And so the danger then, of course, is politics, the mandate for the desired end, not at all dependent on our sinful desires. Is it, see, once again, reflecting the spiritual state of people, then gives way, gives administration the right, the bureaucracy, to use any means necessary to enforce that. And that's, you know, that's, we've seen the rise of the centralized bureaucracy, sometimes called the fourth branch of government, where all of a sudden now, instead of lex rex, the law is king, it's become Rex Lex. The king becomes law. And so that's just at a government mandate. You know, there's your political understanding. You know, that's, like I say, you can go back and if you want more of that. But a lot of the problems we complain about are a rise of the original progressives. And that has crept through time, but that has morphed. And so the result has become the government reflects our culture, our spiritual state, our worldview. Someone once said, we get the government we deserve, good and hard. And that's, I mean, that is a true thing. What, when we get to vote, how are we voting? For our own selfish interests or for the glory of God? Far be it from that, but what's good for the nation? And so the differences between progressives and what I call neo-progressives, which are today, and this is going to have more direct impact on progressivism in the church. Progressives were anti-constitution. You know, I read you some quotes. But they were affected by modernism, which was a movement that emphasized progress, like our steamroller there, science, reason, and it rejected norms and traditions and the supernatural. Now it's all about, in the wise words of Escalito, Ben, I believe in science. Like that. So progressives of the 1800s, early 1900s were anti-constitution, yes, but they were still pro-objective truth. They were pro-American exceptionalism, pro-anthropocentrism, which means, you know, man-centered. When we look at the environment, things, we, man is the center, pro-nuclear family, pro-moral standards. You know, yes, they had differences, some slight differences, but there was still clinging to that modernist idea of truth. The neo-progressives, you know, the people that call themselves, you know, they don't like being called liberals today. I'm a liberal in the proper sense of that word, meaning open-minded, things like that. Progressives today are really neo-progressives. They're anti all of the above. Morals, American exceptionalism. They are biocentric, meaning life-centered, not human-centered. So, you know, we are a plague on society. You know, we need to care more about species that have the same rights as we do. So, and that's the effect of those postmodernism effects that affect the progressive that has infected culture, government, and then next week we'll take a look at the church, because it's a rejection of objective truth and radical, all those things. And so, in some shape, a lot of that has crept into the church, so that the central purpose definition of the church is no longer as defined for 2,000 years. It's become something else. And so next week, we will look at the 10 commandments for progressive Christians. And so those effects of that way of thinking and that shift in, you know, modernism, postmodernism, the shift of thinking, like Pilate, you know, he was reflecting that in that John passage. What is truth? And so when you doubt truth, you end up with all these other problems. And it affects the church, the human organization of the church. So thank you for your patience. It's all to God's glory. Let's pray. Lord, thank you for your word. Thank you that Jesus is truth incarnate. Thank you for your word, which is truth. And help us as people who claim to be Christians, even in this local church family, may we keep central that which needs to be central and not fall prey to all these isms and radical devolution of our self-centered autonomy. Lord, may we live lives that bring you glory. And as was said earlier in adult Bible study, we just want to be Jesus followers. Help us to do that by your grace. And we will give you all the praise and the glory. And all God's people said, Amen.